possessing something sweet, 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 sweet.
That makes that. Okay, I'm joined by DJ Newmark of Jurassic 5 fame. How are you?
How you doing today, man?
I'm great. Hey, thanks for taking the time to talk to us over here at Kill Radio.
Oh, my pleasure.
So, before we talk about Jurassic 5 and your other projects, I'd like to talk to you about what it is to be a DJ. Have you ever seen those bumper stickers out there that say drum machines have no soul?
That's my least favorite sticker in the whole wide world.
Yeah, it kills me, man. And in my mind, you know, you represent the kind of counter-argument to that. So, tell me.
You're really hitting on a topic that I'd love to talk about, man.
Oh, good, good. So, right out of the gate.
That sticker kills me, and I never have ever expressed it to anybody. That's pretty funny. You know, guitars don't have soul. Keyboards don't have soul. Pianos don't have soul. Violins don't have soul. It's not the instrument that has a soul or possesses a soul. It's the person who plays it.
Right.
So a person can play a drum machine with soul just as they can play a guitar with soul. So
that's the right answer, yeah. Now, you, funny. Besides...
I'm sorry, that guy was selling them for like a dollar or something like that in front of Amoeba or something like
that.
Yeah,
so he was like passing them out for a buck. And yeah, I see them on, well, I mean, not to be a promote stereotypes, I see them mostly on pickup trucks, but.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's a whack at urban music, and it's a whack at any kind of electronic music, which is bull because, you know, I hate when people try to dictate to me what's creative and what's art, you know? You know, it is what it is, and, you know. People accept art and see things through their own eyes. That's why, you know, perspective is so important in art. You know, people, you know, sometimes see things that other people don't see, and that spawns another idea. So,
well, you're also, besides being a DJ, you're also a percussionist, a drummer. Do you see a sort of any significant difference between the art of being a DJ and the art of live performance, or is it just different expressions of being a musician?
Between being a DJ and the art of live performance, is that what you said?
Yeah, like between drumming and DJing, are they both, like some people don't consider DJing performance. Like I've been asked that myself as a DJ, like, do you play? Like, you know, like, well, yeah, but I play, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, there's some similarities, and there's obviously a lot of differences, but I think the similarities are, you know, more based on, you know, it being a rhythmic art, you know. To be a DJ, you have to have that same kind of percussive feel.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're not really finding notes per se, you know, like you're not really digging and finding the perfect key on a turntable. It's more of hitting the right pattern, you know, getting your syncopation together, and you know, so in that way it's the same as drumming, but pretty much everything else is different. I would say, you know, with drumming you have to really build up a different type of stamina for sure, and you're obviously using your legs and your hands and your feet and your hands, I should say. So it's different, you know. But they were similar enough for me to get into, you know, playing with turntables, you know, because I started out as a drummer. So
was that a natural progression for you to go from drumming as a kid to finding the turntables as an instrument?
Yeah, you know, like as a kid, it was, you know, you think so much simpler though, you know, and you have just. You're ready to do anything. You have big dreams, you know. And so, when I was playing drums as a kid, my my best friend at the time, this kid named Chris Cook, his uncle used to DJ and make us mixtapes for us to break to. And one day I saw, you know, his uncle's setup, and I think it was just the basic setup of it that made me want to be a DJ, like just the round turntable, just like the round drum. It was just really that simple. Like I was thinking so, you know, elementary, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it was literally, you know, that time. I was in elementary school, and I was like, wow, that just looks cool, you know. And I was, you know, the mixer part I wasn't as interested in as, like, wow, he's like scratching the turntable. Like, that's everything my mother told me not to do, you know.
So playing, like, you sort of have that childlike feeling like you're getting away with something by manipulating the sound.
That's like everything else in hip-hop, though, you know. Like, that's what's so cool about hip-hop. It's like you're not supposed to spray paint on walls. You're supposed to sing when you get up behind a microphone, but instead you're talking, you know?
Right, right.
It's like every other art form, and is all the elements of hip-hop, you know, are, it represents rebellion. So this was another piece of it, and I really dug it.
That's great. And did you start collecting records when you were young?
Yeah, you know, I it took me, you know, I started with a small bunch of like 20 records, you know, and I didn't seem to move very far after I got those first 20 records for some reason. I think it's because I was trying to learn how Mixmaster Ice from UTFO was scratching. I was trying to like just learn what he was doing, and I felt like I couldn't buy any more records until I learned how he was scratching these parts.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is I didn't understand how the beats were made. Like, I didn't understand like sequencing and how things changed, and it was all really technical at the beginning for me. I was like, well, how are they getting those drum sounds? Like, because before that, I was playing drums to groups like AC/DC, who I thought had the biggest drums in music,
mm-hmm.
you know, or like Rush, or like, you know, like classic rock groups, because, you know, they had the biggest drums. But when hip-hop came around, not only did it steal rock's bad boy image, it stole the sound. Like, the depth of the sound was so much sonically greater, like, in my opinion. Like, the drums were way deeper, like, the whole spectrum, like, the high highs to the low lows, all the way down the musical spectrum was just so much, you know, so much more full and rich, whereas rock seemed to kind of dabble in the mid-range and up area, you know. And so I was just, like, blown away by the whole thing. I was just, like, stuck on the one record, basically, and it took about a year after that, and then I started really getting into digging.
Yeah, I imagine now you live in a series of tunnels, just like with records everywhere, huh?
Yeah, basically.
Does it? Do you get like personally, emotionally attached to records? Like when you clean out records that you don't really play anymore, does it kind of hurt to give them up?
Well, I mean, I don't really give them up. I mean, I clean them out. I clean them up. But you know, what ends up happening is if I feel like that, I'll just play the record. You know, and I'll just sit in my home and just listen to the record.
Sort of rediscover what you liked about it.
Exactly. And it's like that with so many groups that I was like, wow, why did I even like this? Like, you know, with the group, with J5, we talk about why do we even like, you know, this group or that group, or we'll say a lyric and we'll laugh about it. Like, damn, that lyric was kind of whack, but, or that, you know, that beat wasn't all that great, but for that time, it was the right song at the right time, you know? And I think that's what's so important about art, you know? Sometimes you just have to express what's happening today, you know?
What do you think is happening today in terms of hip hop? Like, what, when people think of hip hop, what is it that they're thinking of now? And, you know, how would you like to change that?
Well, it's all minced up now. I mean, that it's kind of one of my gripes, but you know, it is what it is. But I don't really dig the fact that, you know, there's an area for Jiggy, and there's an area for crunk, and there's an area for underground, and there's an area for hyphy, and there's like, you know, I don't like all the divisions. I rather hip-hop just represent one,
mm-hmm.
because usually when anything gets divided, that's when it becomes spread thin and turns kind of weak.
Mm-hmm.
This is just my opinion. A lot of people agree that, you know, the opposite of what I'm saying, but, you know, I get a lot of, like, you know, MySpace snobs coming on my site, like, you know, what do you think about crunk music? And, you know, I'm like, it's all hip hop, you know, like, it's all one, you know, like, if once we start dividing ourselves, that's when we fall, you know, like, so.
So you don't see more than like a semantic difference between the word rap and the word hip hop?
No, I'm not into that. I hate that. I hate when people talk about that, because it's like, dude, rap is a part of hip hop. Like,
uh-huh.
That whole argument has never made any sense to me. I've never understood that. That's rap and that's hip-hop. No, rap is a part of hip-hop. Like, it's, you're missing the whole point. And hip-hop is a culture, and rap is a part of the hip-hop culture. So, you know, I think I understand what they're trying to say. They're trying to say that that's more watered down than, you know, cats that are really trying to express what's coming from their soul and really trying to say something,
mm-hmm.
you know, or change something or be conscious or whatever you want to call it. But I understand what they're trying to say, so I don't want to, like, you know...
Yeah, but it's never a good idea to take a word and just, like, give it a negative connotation, you know?
Yeah,
like,
I mean,
liberal is a dirty word these days,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, rap has a positive connotation in my mind, and always has,
mm-hmm.
you know? You know, at the beginning, I didn't know whether to call it rap music or hip-hop music when I was 12 years old, but, you know, it turned out to be hip-hop music, but that's how close those words were. So that, you know, both those words have such a positive meaning, so...
Let me ask you a little bit about Hands On. You released this compilation mix CD in 2004, and it's a bunch of personal favorites from your collection. And one of the things I think is interesting, very different from Jurassic 5, is Jurassic 5 is very much about the experience of being in Los Angeles. There's a definite Los Angeles feel about it. But Hands On has this very international, worldly feel to it. Tell me a little bit about that process.
Yeah, you know, it kind of was, oddly enough, born out of traveling with J5 that I kind of figured that out, that, well, like, if you go to the UK or if you go to Australia or Japan or France or, you know, any other place outside of the U.S., really, you'll realize that there's a lot of really good beats and a lot of good hip-hop, and although it's in a different language, you can tell that they're catching a good flow, and then it kind of just made me think, wow, like, we really don't give any of those dudes a chance, like, on our radio, let alone on the mixtapes, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
You don't hear any of that stuff. And so then I started thinking, well, wow, do they play our stuff out there? And then sure enough, you
of
know,
course.
Like, I go to people's playlists and they got, you know, J5, they got, you know, Busta Rhymes, they got Dilated, they got, you know, everybody from the States. So I'm like, well, why isn't it the other way around? And I guess it's just the language difference or whatever. But so I was like, you know, forget that. You know, this I'm hearing good stuff, and I want to fill a gap. So I'm going to continue to do that on the next mix CD, which I'm working on now as well.
Is that going
to
be like a Hands-On Volume 2?
I'm not going to call it Hands-On Volume 2, but I'm going to have a portion where I dedicate it to foreign music for sure.
Do you think there's different, that certain languages lend themselves better to rhyming and rap than other languages? Like the Key Cool track in Japanese, like that has a flow to it. It has like a lot of hard consonants, you know, but maybe... maybe Spanish is a little bit harder to rap in.
Hmm.
I don't know if you ever thought about that.
I would say Japanese would probably be the hardest, though,
yeah.
Regardless, because, yeah, I heard that their alphabet is just, like, endless. So I'm just going to go off that. But, I, you know, who am I to say? I'm not, you know, I speak one language only, unfortunately. I should be ashamed of myself. But, yeah.
One more thing about Hands-On. You have these little skits about stereotypical Persians in Los Angeles that just cracked me up. What was the inspiration for that?
Well, I'm Persian, so like I just I got this. It was actually off of a radio station. My manager's brother has a radio station, and they do all these crazy segments. And this was one that I just was dying on because it was like, you know, like this actor is just being so stupid. But, you know, that's really a big part of my personality. I'm a real, you know, idiot sometimes, and I just like stupid humor, man. Like, I like witty humor. Like, witty humor's cool, but, like, stupid humor sometimes is just, like, I think because my life has turned so logical and, like, so meticulous and
you need that escape,
the right
huh?
place, and things have to be done by the right date, and, like, you know, everything is just so serious now. So when stupid humor comes around, I just fall out.
That's great, man.
Yeah.
So you have this other project that you worked on with a colleague named Pomo called Blend Crafters, and that was more about instrumental music you guys composed together and put out. Tell me about that process.
Yeah, you know, Pomo is like one of my oldest friends, and he's always made beats. I've always made beats. I'd come off a tour and I'd play him beats, and whenever we could hook up, we'd always like have a, you know, just a session where we'd play each other music and records. And so it was just like one of those projects that was long overdue, you know. It wasn't supposed to be any kind of commercial success. We knew that walking into it. We just said, let's just do a good little, cool little independent record, just to say that we've done an independent record together. We've known each other for so long, you know. He's like one of my best homies. So that's all it was, you know. I could have easily gone to, you know, a producer of a higher level or someone who put their name out more, but I just wanted to do something with my homie, you know, like I didn't, mm-hmm. This wasn't by any means like my solo debut or like me stepping out of J5 and like trying to do something monumental. I was just trying to do a fun project, and inevitably it's kind of interesting because like this year everybody's kind of coming around to that record, which is a trip.
Mm-hmm.
So it took a long time for it to set in people's minds and for people to even know the project was out, actually. So, but no, it was fun.
Well, I think music, like, I think a lot of acid jazz music and trip-hop music is becoming more popular now and more accessible to people. And so when you release an album it's hip-hop, but, I mean, there's actually no vocals on that album.
Yeah.
I think... Maybe now because of changes in the music industry, people are able to see it a little better. As an art form that uses a lot of samples of other music, how do you do you base what you choose on whether or not you think you're going to be able to get the rights, or do you go ahead and make the song and then see if you can use it?
Oh, I just create first, because if I think too hard at the beginning, I'll end up just staring at a drum machine for like 4 hours straight. So, yeah, no, you just got to, you know, that's how writer's block, you know, ensues. But, yeah, like, and when I get out writer's block, or if I start thinking, I just work. I just make something really whack just so I'm moving and working, and at least my brain's kind of moving and something's happening upstairs, you know. Otherwise, no. Yeah, I can't think about if I'm going to get clearance. Otherwise, it's a dead issue. I've had really good luck with getting clearance from old artists as well, you know, from cats of the 70s and 60s. It's the cats of today that are being pricks.
Yeah, because they want a lot of money and they want a lot more credit, something like that?
Well, they'll either flat out deny it, or they've sampled someone else, so you got to kick clearance through them.
And oh, so it wasn't even theirs to begin with, huh?
Yeah, or they have like this pre-Madonna thing going on where they think that, you know, they're the next best thing since sliced bread.
Right.
So, like, they treat the clearance like it's their ticket out of the hood or something. I don't know. Like, you know, master side 10 G's, you know, publishing side 20 G's.
Oh, man.
You know, like, it's like, dude, like, you know, I'm not made of money. Like, I just sampled, like, Hit It or whatever it is. You know what I'm saying? The hip-hop artist trip and the rock artist trip of today. That's been my experience from doing records using a sample clearance agency since 92. So that's just my personal experience. I'm sure other people have had different experiences.
But you probably had the opposite experience as well, where someone's like, hell yeah, sample this. Like, that'd be great, right?
Yeah, for underground artists or for groups that are on small label or indie label, yes. I've definitely had that experience. For groups that are on a major label, both management and the company trips. The company trips just because they don't have the manpower to handle the clearance. They simply don't have enough people in the record companies to do a lot of things, like promotion, just for an example. But, I mean, so what ends up happening is they just straight up deny it because they don't have the manpower to formulate the clearance. They don't have enough people there to collect my $10,000 is what I'm trying to tell you.
Right.
Or they do and they just hike it up. And the manager, you know, on the publishing side, bugs out and says, well, I'll just follow the record company. They're charging 10, so I'll charge 10 because, you know, they don't have a mind of their own, I guess, or they just don't want to deal with it or, you know, I don't know. It's a weird thing. But, you know, like if I go and sample, you know, an Eddie, you know, Holman record or something or like, you know, an old record, you know, they'll work with you a little bit more because the record has been out of the limelight for a while. And, you know, publishing is publishing, man. You know, getting a check in the mail for watching TV at the house is a good thing.
Yeah. Is this this part of the industry, is the business element of it kind of frustrating for you? Like, would you rather just, you know, be able to make music and, like, have someone else take care of that? Or is that just sort of an impossible thing?
Well, you know, I can sit and complain here like, you know, like I'm actually doing the clearances myself and all this is so tough. But, you know, I've been very fortunate to have a, you know, good management and a good sample clearance agency that handles that for me, whatever. It's nerve-wracking. It's not, you know, I wouldn't say like that it's, I would say it makes me really nervous. That's what I would say more than anything else, because you're waiting for that clearance to come back. And meanwhile, you're like 5 months, 4 months out from, you know, your record being released. And so,
and you've already put so much work into it.
Knowing that a whole beat can get scrapped because of a denial is really, it's frightening, dude, because then you got to like, okay, that song's either gone, which usually that's what ends up happening, or you rework the loop or the sample, whatever, which never really sounds the same and kind of takes the soul out of your original intent.
That's rough, man. Listen, tell me a little bit about the difference between working on your own or with Pomo versus working with five other collaborators on Jurassic 5.
Well, it's... Yeah, there's good sides and bad sides. I mean, I guess the good side is that you don't have to bounce your ideas off of so many people to get, you know, to get clearance to put it out. And so you don't end up like second guessing your work as much. You kind of just like, oh, that feels good. I like it. I'm putting it on paper. That's it. You know, like I'm putting it on track. It's done. But the, you know, the other side of that, which is I think even the tougher part, is like you don't have as many ideas. You know, with J5. It's a group of, well, how about this? How about that? You know, everybody's brainstorming. We're throwing out things. You know, at the end of the day, there might have been, you know, plan A, B, C, and D, you know, whereas, you know, when you're working by yourself, you really only have, like, a plan A or B, if that, you know, you just kind of go off what feels good, you know, unless you're really, you know, thinking through stuff. But, yeah, there's a good and bad with every, you know, yin and yang with everything.
I think one of the things that separates J5 from a lot of the commercial music we hear is I think J5 is known for being serious about their own creative control, and that the sound that they produce is the J5 sound. Even the name of your first album, Quality Control. And I know you guys worked really hard to find yourselves a label that would allow you to keep creative control. What was that process like?
Well, a lot of labels, you know, back in when we were shopping our deal, we got approached by pretty much every label, and Interscope was the only label that would put on paper what they would say at the, at the dinners.
At the free dinners?
I'm trying to use the right word, but dinners is the right word. They were the only, you know, they'd be like, you know, we'd say, well, we need, you know, creative control, 100% creative control, or, you know, this, that, and the third, and then be like, you know, a lot of labels be like, yeah, sure, and then when the paperwork came, and we like, hey, what happened to this? Like, oh, we can't do that now. Well, next.
so you guys really held out for a while then, huh?
Yeah, we did. I mean, when we were doing the EP, we did that independently, and that, you know, got up to about 300,000 units sold worldwide, you know, by ourselves. So we were like, we needed a major label, in the sense that we needed to get to the next level. Like, we, you know, we always use the phrase, you know, we can't wear a medium forever, because, like, we needed a video. We needed, like, to, you know, if there's that much interest in us when we were, you know, just selling it ourselves, then we needed to get it to another level. There's obviously an audience there, and we wanted to get our music to be heard, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We've never been, like, the gung-ho underground artists, though. You know, I think that's the biggest misconception of our group. I think we grew up listening to K-Day in Los Angeles, and listening to groups like Run DMC and De La and Public Enemy and all the greats on the radio, you know?
Right.
So we've always wanted to be on the radio. Like, that was, like, the whole thing. I think it's a real fundamental thing for just musicians, not just, you know, hip-hop artists, is to be heard. You know, like, it should be... You want your music to be heard. If you're proud of something, you want it to be heard. Otherwise, everybody would just be a bedroom DJ.
Sure.
You wouldn't even put it out. Like, anybody who says, you know, yo, I just make music for the love of it, I don't care what the fans think, they're full of it, because otherwise they would have never released it. You know, they would have just stayed in their bedroom and, you know, shut the F up.
But
all the thing is that we really wanted to get it out there, you know.
But you want to be heard, but you also want to be recognized. I mean, like, one of the things that's different about Jurassic 5 than a lot of the rap music that you hear today is, like you mentioned, De La Soul. Like, they're one of my favorite groups, and it's because they have this sort of jazzy approach to the music, and it's about storytelling and rhyming. It's about a lot of things. You know, it makes you want to listen to it. You don't just hear it. It's not just in the background.
Right.
You know, and I think that's one of the things that really makes Jurassic 5 stand out. How'd you meet up with those guys?
Well, it was two groups formed as one, actually. It was Rebels of Rhythm, which was Akil Dakir and another cat that passed away named Shawnee, at a place called The Good Life. They were at The Good Life, you know, rhyming over there. And then the other group was Unity Committee, which was Charlie Tuna, Mark Seven, and Cut Chemist. I was in neither group. They all met at The Good Life. Although I frequented the Good Life, I didn't really meet up with those guys there. I met up with them at another place called Rat Race, which was like the Roots. It was like the a live band, and MCs would go up and bust over a live band. I was like the house DJ. So it's two groups formed as one plus me, basically. So, and, you know, we did one song together, and it came out good, called Unified Revolution. And then next thing you know, we were recording together, you know. We were just like, let's just keep going.
How did you know that your style of instrumentation and their style of rapping were going to be such a perfect fit?
None of us knew any of that. We were just having fun. We were just kids having fun. You know, like, it was had nothing to do with, this is the artist I need to work with at this time. It was just like, kind of, wow, I really admire Charlie Tuna. Wow, I really admire Cut Chemist. Wow, Soup is like one of the funkiest MCs that I've heard in a while. It was just like one of those things. It was just like, you know, I want to work with this guy because he's cool, you know, and I get along with these guys. I think the thing that attracted me the most to J5 was it was the first time I met a group of MCs that knew just as much about records as I did.
Huh.
You know, and usually all the MCs that I met before then didn't know diddly about records. Like, they knew, like, the main artists, but for the most part, I wasn't going to get anybody, you know, talking to me about really deep artists that was an MC at that time, in L.A. anyway. In New York, it might have been a different story, but in L.A., you know, for Soup to be talking to me about, you know, a lyric that Educated Rapper did on a UTFO record, I was like, whoa, you know, like, that's kind of, it was cool. It was really cool. You know what I'm saying? It was one of the things, one of the reasons why I bond with DJ so well is because we're able to talk with records, talk about records, you know, so.
Was that your experience when you started working with Cut Chemist?
Oh, yeah. Well, Cut is deep. I mean, Cut's like, he was like the first dude that really got me into digging hard. I was digging, but I wasn't digging hard. Like, I was, you know, as far as like finding like specific artists from the 70s, like, I was finding artists, like, before I met Cut, I was going to thrift shops and into, like, swap meets and stuff and going through records, but I wasn't looking for any specific artists. I was just looking through things that looked cool,
mm-hmm.
Whereas Cut was, like, Cut had, like, he was a mess. He was, like, he had a whole list of artists he was looking for. Like, he had, like, he knew what he was looking for, and the thing about it was, you know, he has, like, a mind like a steel trap, you know, he has a great memory, you know, like, he can remember everything. He didn't have to write anything down. He knew what he wanted in his head, you know, just from talking to other DJs or pulling them off the Ultimate Breaks and Beats or, you know, and that was really impressive to me because his whole goal when I met him anyway was like, I need to find a sample from that PE thing. I need to find a sample from that De La thing. And I was like, why would you want to try to find something that's already been sampled? You know, but I knew why, because he was mixing them shits live. So I was like, okay, cool. So it was all good.
About the words, are you involved in the writing? Does Jurassic 5 have a is there a message besides just making good music? Is there a message they're trying to get out? Is there a political bent or anything like that?
No, I think that's another misconception about the group. I think there's, like, more, you know, there's some cats in our group that are, like, more political than others. I think, like, Akil and Charlie are probably the more political cats in our group. I don't think there's a, you know, any kind of political bent on, you know, where they're trying to go. I think every now and then they'll throw something in, but for the most part, you know, like, especially for this album, for the new album, I think, like, the whole thing is just, like, say what you want to say, do what you want to do, and everybody be themselves. You know, there's no, like, one, there's no concept over the record, or there's no, like, this song should be about politics. And I think that's what made this album that we're working on, or that we just completed, I should say, feel as free as it does.
Cool, man. When's the new release coming out
for Jurassic 5? July 25th.
July 25th. And also, yep. will we see another Blend Crafters, maybe a volume 2?
I don't know. We'll see. We're just all kind of just playing it by ear. I'm definitely going to work on another mix CD before another Blend Crafters happens. But, yeah, we'll see. Maybe.
Well, listen, I want to ask you one more question before I let you get back to work. I know you're really busy. One of the things that you specifically are known for are using instruments that are not known as instruments. I saw on the DVD that came with the Power in Numbers
right.
CD, saw you playing with some catered food and some faucets and stuff like that. Tell me about that. Like, what is as a percussionist, as a musician, like, what are you trying to accomplish in, like, using other instruments?
Well, the thing on the DVD was just me goofing off because I was bored as hell in Belgium. But the live performance where I'm using, like, kids' toys and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, you know, I'm just really bored with. Man, I just straight up, I'm bored with DJing, man. I'm like, I can't see myself ever doing a DJ solo where I'm scratching, you know,
right.
Like, the whole time, or like juggling the whole time. Like, it's just, it got so commercialized after the film Scratch came out. I think I just got really bored with DJing, and I figured, well, like, I want to do something that's going to make people think if I, you know, do a routine on stage. It's actually what I'm trying to come up with right now for the new, you know, stage show, and I'm having a hell of a time. But I'm having a really hard time coming up with something that I really want to do, you know, for 7-8 months straight. But Yeah, so I don't know, man. I think it's just, you know, like me, you know, playing a rubber band or hitting a dust lid or any of that stuff. It just born out of, like, well, me just standing back and looking at the turntable and going, okay, what else can this thing be used for? You know, like, I don't want to just, you know, scratch on it, you know, like, you know, that's part of it. You know, I would never neglect that. But it's just me, like, just, you know, taking a kid's toy and, like, putting a mixer in between two of them and cutting it up. It's just like me going, well, this is what's going to satisfy my intellect for tonight. You know?
And is that part of you cultivating the DJ Newmark sound? Like, do you want people to be able to hear just any kind of hip-hop or a piece of instrumental hip-hop and go, oh, that must be DJ Newmark, because only he knows how to make it quite like that?
I don't know. I don't know if anybody will ever grasp on to, like, I don't know, because I changed, like, the wind, man, like, as far as, like, my production. Like, if someone were to pick up a CD, you know, 2 years from now, I don't know if it would sound anything like, you know, Hands On or, you know, Blind Crafters or Power Numbers or the new Feedback album from J5. Like, I just think they'd be like, what's this? Oh, that's new? Okay, cool. You know, like, that's kind of how I want to hit people. I don't want them to know, oh, that's the signature Newmark sound, because, like, I like to grow with the time, you know? Like, you know, if I was just making beats on a drum machine right now, I think I would be behind the times. But instead, I'm using a computer as well, and, like, I like to move a little bit, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not an old school cat in that way, you know. I pride myself off of, you know, old school cats, and I'm an old school dude, but, like, I do new school stuff as well, so I like to move.
Can we see you perform anywhere in LA anytime soon?
Me personally, I'm not going to be spinning, but the group's going to be at a benefit that's really important for a guy named Keith Tamashiro, who used to do all the artwork, or has done all the artwork for J5 and a lot of groups out of LA. It's a benefit for him, and it's at the Mayan, and it's the 25th of June. No, I'm sorry, of May, 25th of May.
Oh, it's coming up soon. All right.
It's like Brain Freeze meets Word of Mouth, so it's going to be really dope.
Oh, wow. Cool.
Yeah, MF Doom, J5, Cut Chemist, Shadow. It's going to be deep. Mad Lib.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, look, man, thanks for making such great music, and, you know, we look forward to hearing more, and thanks for taking the time to talk to me on Is Good on Kill Radio.
Cool, man.
Take care, man. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Right on. Bye.
Take care.
That was DJ Newmark of Jurassic 5. You've been listening to Is Good with John Hirschfield on killradio.org. This is from Blendcrafters.